Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to Quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This episode contains discussions about sexual abuse. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, Alarmy, check out Alarmist on Patreon for ad-free episodes and bonus content. Here's a preview of our Guest Alarmist series, only on Patreon.
That really?
He's the inventor of the flush toilet. Yeah, John Crapper.
No, yeah. You're kidding. She's kidding.
I'm serious. I'm not
John
joking.
Crapper is the inventor of the flush toilet.
John Crapper, Thomas, he Stop. Was...
That's why crap is crap?
Yeah.
Go to patreon.com/thealarmist and subscribe today. Now, on to our episode. Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into this episode of The Aftermath. Today we're speaking with guest expert, Dr. Elizabeth Jeglick. Dr. Jeglick is a clinical psychologist and professor of psychology at John Jay College in New York. She studies sexual violence prevention, sexual abuse, and sexual grooming, and is the author of multiple publications, including Sexual Grooming, Integrating Research, Practice, Prevention, and Policy. Let's hear what she has to say about the Mary Kay Letourneau case. Dr. Jeglick, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Can you start off by giving us some background on Mary Kay Letourneau, her upbringing and her childhood?
Sure. So what we know is generally what's available in the public media. But from what I know is that she was raised in a strict Catholic family. She was one of multiple children. When she was a child, sadly, she was in a pool when her younger brother drowned. Her father became a politician and at one point actually ran unsuccessfully for a candidate for U.S. president. She then went to high school, and it was at that point that it was revealed that her father had engaged in multiple affairs and had two children that way, and her parents separated, although ultimately they reconciled. And then I think she went and when she was at the University of Arizona is when she met her husband, and they got married, and I think subsequently went to Alaska where she had her first child, and they proceeded to have multiple children, moving back, I think, to Washington State. And it was alleged that during that point that she was, that her husband was verbally and emotionally abusive to her. She did complete a teaching license and was a teacher, as well as a mother of four children, and taught grade 2 and 6. And I think she had Vili Folau in both her grade 2 and 6 classes.
And who was Vili Folau? What was his relationship with Mary Kay like at first?
From what is understood, again, based on public information, you know, she had him first in class in grade 2, and then she had him again in grade 6. He was a child of immigrants, and he was relatively physically large for his age, so he stood out. He had an interest in drawing, which is how she kind of took him under her wing. I think she wanted to develop that interest, and she allegedly spent a lot of time alone with him. It is known that his mother allowed him to spend time after school in the evenings, and sometimes I think even sleeping over at her house, which is how, you know, it was believed that some of those boundaries got crossed.
And you write extensively about sexual grooming. What is sexual grooming, and how did it manifest in this case, in the Mary Kay Letourneau Vili situation?
So sexual grooming is the deceptive process that sex offenders use to, you know, select vulnerable victims, gain access to, and isolate them from, you know, guardians and those around them. And then to develop the trust that allows them to then cross those boundaries, we see that they start to, you know, they give the children what they are lacking oftentimes. So that can be love, attention, affection. And then they start crossing physical boundaries by, you know, touching them, initially not sexually, but then that becomes increasingly sexual. They also will interject, you know, sexualized talk, ask children about sexual topics, teach them about sexual education. And so we see that that then precedes the contact sexual abuse. Once the sexual abuse happens, they often engage in what are called post-abuse maintenance behaviors so that they prevent the child from disclosing or them being detected. And oftentimes it enables the abusive behaviors to continue. Those include, you know, telling the child it's a secret, making them feel culpable for the abuse because they didn't do anything to stop it, making them feel like what they're engaging in is normal, that it's love. And so, you know, what we can glean from this case was that, you know, she chose Vili because potentially he was vulnerable. He was larger than the other children. He maybe, you know, it was a child of immigrants, and that potentially was a vulnerability, you know, and she was able to spend time with him. So she, you know, recognized that he had this artistic talent, and she had was able to gain access to him by telling, you know, his mother that, you know, he had this ability and she was going to help him develop it. So she took him to her home and had overnights with him. And so that allowed her to separate him from his guardians. You know, she gave him a lot of attention and she made him feel important that he had these special talents and gifts. And so, you know, there was also, you know, he was a young developing male. And so his sexual interests probably were developing, and she, you know, allowed those boundaries to be crossed. She talked about in Barbara Walters's interview, how, why can't it ever just be a kiss? I think they had a kiss at night that then, you know, proceeded to sexual behavior. And we know that in 1997, they were actually caught together in the backseat of a car by police, and she was arrested and later had his baby. So we know that at some point she had, you know, sexually abused him.
And speaking about that time that she was caught, they were in a van, it's 1 a.m. And yet no charges at that time were made, or questions even seemed to be asked about the relationship or the time that it was all occurring. And why didn't authorities intervene? Is there any legal protocol for when police find an adult with a child in a compromising situation like this?
Yes. Yeah, so we have to kind of think about this in light of the time. I think, you know, we're still thinking back to the stranger danger where, you know, sexual predators were the strangers in the white van. You know, those times start to change around the early 1990s. We were becoming increasingly aware that it could be other people, you know, or it could happen within the home. But we still had stereotypes about women as perpetrators. I think, you know, women, there's the belief that women are nurturers, that they are motherly. And, you know, Mary Kay Letourneau, if you saw pictures of her, she was this prim and proper woman, a mother of four, a teacher in the community. So she defies all that, you know, stranger in the white van type predator image. And so I think both she and Villy lied to the police at that time. And based upon those stereotypes and biases, you know, it wasn't suspected that anything was going on. And I believe it was at that time that, you know, the police called his mother, and she even like let him continue staying at Mary Kay's house that night because she believed that this was the teacher who was helping her son and that nothing, you know, bad was going on.
And what was her reaction after getting caught? How did she try to spin the abuse? And is this common?
Well, she denied it. She, I think, indicated that she had been in a domestic violence situation. He was at the home and he'd observed it and got upset. And she had, you know, followed him out and she was just comforting him. You know, again, perpetrators are very rarely going to admit that they had engaged in sexual abusive behaviors because of the consequences. She, you know, while, you know, she claims she didn't really recognize that it was wrong, clearly by lying about it, she knew that there was something, you know, wrong about what had happened between the two of them. And so, you know, I think she fabricated a story. And so it's not atypical for perpetrators to lie.
And the judge who oversaw Mary Kay's first trial gave her a more lenient ruling in exchange for accepting treatment and agreeing not to have contact with Villy. What kind of treatment would have been offered to Mary Kay, and how did it fail?
So it's kind of unclear what types of treatment might be offered. We do, you know, now have treatments for perpetrators that are based on cognitive behavioral principles, where we address, you know, risk factors that we know are associated with sex offending. Less is known about risk factors for females specifically, because of all the sex offenders in our system, only 2% are women. And so we just have fewer women to study. And they're often, you know, they're varying typologies of women who engage in sexual abuse. So it's unclear what treatment was offered to her. You know, it came out that she was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. She obviously, there was trauma in her history based upon, you know, having witnessed her brother die, you know, what was going on at the home with her father, you know, having another family. And if there was interpersonal violence in her marriage, all those would have been traumas. So, you know, ideally, you know, today, knowing what we do about sex offending, those would be issues that would be addressed, because hurt people hurt people. But I don't know what treatment she received. And so it's kind of unclear. While we do know that, you know, on average, sex offenders actually don't recidivate at super high levels. It's about 13 to 14% on average across the board. Risk factors such as access to minors are you know, what makes them at high risk. And so she was forbidden from contacting him, which we know she did anyway.
Right. And we talked on our podcast a little bit about the double standards surrounding this case. How do you think this case would have been different in terms of public reaction and even legally if Mary Kay had been a man and Villy a female student?
Absolutely. It's, I mean, we do see, and the research shows that there are much harsher reactions towards males who perpetrate sex crimes, and especially against younger children and female children, as opposed to women. Interestingly, based on self-report data, we now know that between 12 and 14% of all perpetrators of sex crimes are women. And in Wow. our more recent research, we found that half of them are actually adolescent girls. And so, you know, despite the fact that women are not being prosecuted at high levels, they are a significant portion of the sex offending population. And so we kind of have to think about how those stereotypes and biases come into play. I often call Mary Kay like the first female sex offender. Obviously, she is not the first female to have abused a child, but she was the first one that really kind of came to public attention. And I think that's why, you know, with the Barbara Walters interviews, they were so popular, because it really made us as a society question these biases and stereotypes that we had about who is a perpetrator and how could a woman, you know, engage in this type of behavior and harm a child the way that she did. But even Barbara Walters was kind of subject to that. You know, she didn't call, she called it a relationship instead of sexual abuse. You know, and so I think as time goes on, you know, things have changed, and in her, you know, as they described her after she'd passed recently, they called her a sex offender, and they talked about the abusive behaviors as opposed to the relationship. You know, so I think, you know, society is recognizing and changing its views on females as perpetrators, but you know, she really was the first one that received such public notoriety.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's Amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Do you think that female perpetrators differ from male perpetrators, and are there any warning signs that were overlooked?
It's hard to say. Again, like, we have so few women that we know who have engaged in sexual offending behavior that it's still kind of a developing area of research. And so, but what we do know is there are various different typologies. One of them is the teacher lover, where we often have women who have histories of trauma and mental illness who fall in love, and I say that in quotes, with young teenage males. And because, again, like, you know, thinking about the teenage male and the stereotypes of wanting to have sex and engaging in, you know, the, you know, sex with the teacher. I think there's like a Jennifer Lopez movie about that. And there's a few Netflix series about that. You know, this for a young man might be appealing. And our research actually suggests that women use more overtly sexual grooming behaviors as opposed to men, especially when they're targeting teenage boys, because that's what, you know, is appealing. It's, you know, they start talking about sexual topics, they start exposing their naked bodies to them, and that then leads to the boundaries being crossed. It's only later in life, and I think that was the case with Mr. Folau as well, that they recognize how these, you know, these relationships that are inappropriate and violation of boundaries and sexually abusive can impact their development. And so it's still a developing area of research, but we do know that, you know, women who engage in these types of behaviors do have trauma histories, often, you know, come from situations where there is domestic violence, and there's often a history of abuse and mental illness as well.
And we also discussed in our episode how odd this case was reported about at the time. You know, you mentioned that it was the first of its kind to actually be out in the media. Now, looking back, the coverage seems very strange, very appalling at times. How did the 90s media coverage miss the mark so badly?
Yeah, I think they didn't know how to take this case. I think it was
Right.
it wasn't really recognized as sexual abuse. I mean, it was clearly an aberration. And I think the fact that she was a teacher and he was so young, like when you think about that, he was 12 years old. Like, I have a 13-year-old son, and he has trouble organizing his work for the day. Like, nonetheless, having, a child in a relationship with, a grown woman, it's and not a relationship, obviously, it was sexually abusive.
Right.
But it's just, I think they really didn't know how to portray it. I think they didn't recognize this as sexual abuse. I think, what came out of Barbara Walters's, early interview with her, the first one, was that there was a lot more sympathy. Like, while initially people were appalled that this happened, when they kind of heard her story and her justification of it, I think people felt more sympathy and empathy for it, as opposed to, what you mentioned earlier about the gender stereotype. Had this been a man, obviously there would be no public sympathy, and we wouldn't have approached it as calling it a relationship and asking about love. And I think at one point she asked her, I don't know which interview it was, but was it passionate? Like, imagine asking a man who had, offended against a young girl, if it was passionate. I mean, that would be,
Oh my God.
So I think it's just, based upon what was known at the time and these stereotypes, it impacted the way that media covered it.
And after her prison term ended, she and Billy were married and eventually raised two kids together. Was this a continuation of the abuse? And in what way?
Yes. I mean, like, when the relationship starts out, with that power dynamic, that abusive dynamic, it's very hard to kind of meet on an equal plane. Like, she was so much older than him. She had already experienced life. He was just starting life. They had, two beautiful children as a result of the abuse. And I think, he had raised those girls. And again, like, there's a stereotype that children need a mother. He was probably confused by all the grooming that was going on. He probably had mixed feelings towards her. We know that he made a suicide attempt, that he dropped out of high school, that he had behavioral problems, that he had substance abuse problems, likely all resulting from the abuse that he experienced at a very young age. And so, I think that this is not an egalitarian relationship, right? For a relationship to work, you have to be on an equal playing field. And that really wasn't the case. While, I'm sure there were loving feelings, there was probably a lot of confusion, and it started out in an abuse dynamic. And so that is not going to result in a healthy relationship going forward. And I think, from what I have read, that even today, he kind of recognizes how that has impacted him today, and how their, what came of their quote unquote relationship. They were married, so when he
Right.
was of age.
What have we learned from this case? And if you could also give us some signs that we should be looking out for, that would help us indicate that there is abuse happening in our community.
Sure. I think this case, again, really shed light on the fact that women can be perpetrators. I think that we cannot overlook, gender stereotypes. I think that, just like we, as parents, maybe wouldn't let our young children hang out with a man by themselves, the same thing should go for a woman. We have to be careful. Just because women are known to be nurturers, we still have to make sure that we are providing adequate guardianship. And from our research, as I said, what we're seeing is that there are a lot of those sexual boundaries that are being crossed, that women are engaging in a lot more, showing their naked bodies, talking about sexual topics. And so if any of that is observed, I think that it is really, a red flag that potential grooming is going on and that those boundaries might be violated. And, we're seeing, like, almost every week I see in the media that there's been a case of a female teacher with a teenage male student. And so we just have to be aware that in, school dynamics, because, in school they have access to children. Like, they, other than parents, teachers are the ones that see our kids the most, and there's not, that boundary going on. So teachers should not be texting students regardless of their gender. So that's another thing that we're seeing more and more in these cases, is these texting relationships, social media. There should be no social media interaction between, adults and children, female or male. So those are the things that, as parents, we want to watch out for.
So we ask all of our guest experts this question. Finally, if at the end of the day, if you had to pick a person or thing, it could be a concept that you think is to blame for the Mary Kay Letourneau case, who or what would that be?
I think it really is an artifact of the times. You know, I think the gender stereotype, I think if this again was a male, we would have recognized it much sooner. And so I think just really recognizing that anybody can be a perpetrator, and we have to think about, you know, the obvious signs. And there probably were warning signs in the school that we could have seen potentially. There wasn't a lot of discussion about that in this case. But, you know, I think just gender stereotypes and being aware of how that kind of came into play, and using science now, what we know.
Thank you so much, Dr. Jeglik. And we're going to head over to Patreon and discuss this further.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you'd like to hear our post-interview discussion and final verdict, head over to Patreon and subscribe. Your support is greatly appreciated. Check out our show notes for a link, or head over to patreon.com/thealarmist. And stay tuned, because next week we'll be discussing the assassination of Julius Caesar. The Alarmist.
Powered by Acast.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love, and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.